It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Welcome in to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. If you want to join the show, you can call us at 312-332-3776. We have some questions about you hitting me with a golf ball on hole number, I think it was six at Bray Lock yesterday. Yeah,
something
six,
like
a par five. We were in the fairway, so we'll get to baseball.
No, we were off the side.
And I've got something about quarterbacks and Sam Darnold coming up for you, too.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get to that in a second. A couple of questions. First of all, the question of, so Abdallah, in the middle of the fairway, takes a full
middle
swing.
Middle of the fairway.
It
was in the rough. It was rough.
Yeah, shorter rough, though. It wasn't like
I didn't need a machete to be, hacking at wildlife in there, no.
You took a full hack,
yeah,
and then immediately hit me in the arm. The ball right into my forearm.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of people asking on Twitter, why didn't anyone yell four?
There was no time.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to clarify here. You guys all would have yelled four?
Oh, absolutely.
If you didn't scold that directly at me.
Yeah, I'm a four guy. I yell four. I yell four when I don't need to yell four. I yell four because of bad depth perception sometimes. Sometimes I just want to yell four.
There's no one within six holes of us.
I'm overly aggressive with my four. If I hit it over into a tree or over a tree, I'll yell four just because I don't know what's on the other side. I yell four for the houses. I actually didn't hit a house yesterday.
No, that was someone else at your house, not me.
Yeah, it was your brother-in-law.
No four yelled at that time, though.
No.
We just watched that soar.
Well, everybody gets silent, and you just wait for the...
Yeah, it's good times.
Oops.
To clarify that, you guys didn't yell four because there was not enough time to even yell four, let alone react to the strange angle that ball came off the club. Now, Tyler asked the question... Or he said the statement in the commercial break, you must have towed that. Abdallah hit it so hard, he did not tow it.
Mm-hmm.
He got the full club face on the golf ball. It just, the problem was, he then at some point faced me as he took that swing,
mm-hmm.
and the ball just came directly, line drive, right for my forearm.
Yeah,
right against it.
I didn't.
How do you do that? How do you do that with your wrist? Swing? You know, what's
good? You got a weak wrist there.
It was easily
my worst shot of the day. Obviously,
I think it was.
And
it was Chris's worst too.
Yeah. Actually, you know what I thought of? So,
I'm a gamer though. I stayed in it, guys.
Shot was really good, and his next tee shot straight as an arrow. So I was like, maybe I rookie of the year to you.
Yeah, we had that discussion on 7 and 8 that perhaps. That I was now a part of a Disney film where now I was going to compete with Brooks Koepka.
And maybe I was going to start this new business where I take bad golfers and I hit them.
Pelt them with.
And then they become good golfers.
So it's our experience yesterday on the golf course. How about that?
I mean, look, I said I was sorry. I felt really bad about it. It was very funny once we realized you were okay. And, we're all better for it.
Yeah, I'm glad I had a cold Coors Light in the cart that I could use.
We need something cold. Oh, okay, grab the beer. Put it on his arm.
Because it turned into a golf ball welt.
Oh, those beautiful blue mountains.
Kept it cold.
It's actually not as bruised up as I thought it was going to be.
I iced it last night. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I think is it hardened or is it like you got a callus or anything like that? Or is it just like, is it sore?
There's no fluid in there.
It's a good thing you're not left-handed. Wait a minute.
Yeah, I am. It's all right. We're good. We good. Black and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I saw this yesterday, and I think it's interesting. Joe Maddon is with the Los Angeles Angels now. He was talking yesterday about the approach to managing a 60-game schedule. Now, remember, Cub fans like to point out that Joe Maddon was great for the locker room, great for the culture, but he didn't know what the H he was doing when it comes to playoff series, managing a bullpen, managing starters, and everything that goes into winning at a high level in the playoffs, even though they won the World Series in 2016. people point to Joe Maddon being the reason why it was so close in Game 7 and all the different managerial moves that he made. Here's Joe Maddon talking about his approach to a 60-game schedule. Here's Joe Maddon yesterday.
Playoff time. When we were in spring training in February, March, had we been told we'd be tied for first place at this juncture of the year, we would have taken it. And when you're tied for first place and it's the calendar is turning to August, that's the playoff run. And you just got to shift your mind into that mode. Part of it might be through necessity, meaning that pitchers might not be ready to go more deeply into games. But the point I'm driving at is that you may have to pull starters sooner. When it comes down to defensive replacements, there's no sense in waiting. You would do that now. In game in progress. Pinch hitting, you would be active like you would in the latter part of the year. You just put your playoff hat on, your playoff IQ or your playoff methods, put that on. And that's the script you should probably work from Jump Street. Because they are. I mean, every game is going to be exaggerated in impact and importance. I like to not apply any more weight to any specific game. I'm still going to try to have the guys understand that. But by how I react to the game, it might indicate differently, meaning that you can't be as tolerant. It's not like April, May, when you permit guys to work through some moments because you know that you need to be stretched out or you just can't cover that many innings over the course of a year. Your bullpen will be worn out, et cetera. So there's a different method. But when you're starting in August and the guys are pretty rested, there's not as much of a concern or need to rest. So there's a different, absolutely a different thing. But just put your playoff hat on from the very first day.
I knew you would like that, and I think Cup fans would like that too.
Man's
isn't
gonna
that
pitch
hilarious?
A dude at 60 games. There's going to be a reliever, some poor reliever on the Angels is going to have 60 appearances.
Isn't that outstanding?
Oh my God! Don't need rest. We're only playing for 2 months.
So you know, as a fan of sports and baseball in general, you look at this 60-game schedule, and I think this is going to be awesome for baseball. You know, we get to this routine that we do throughout the year, where in the spring everyone's excited. You go through the first month or so, things are great. Teams start to fall out of it. Then you get about 2 months of teams who are competitive, teams who are still within distance, and then teams who are completely out of it. There's like three different categories. And the longer the season goes, more and more teams fall out of those first two categories. And what will take place this season is everyone, for the most part, will be involved. And these games, like Joe Maddon's talking about, will be managed like they're playoff games. I love playoff baseball. To me, playoff baseball is one of the absolute best items in sports that you can find, because each pitch means something. Each move by a manager means something. The moves from one day to the next impact greatly what you're trying to do. So as I look forward to how this summer is going to play out, once we actually get to baseball, I'm thrilled. And it has nothing to do with the fact that there's really going to be nothing else going against it until the NBA starts up, you know, until the NHL starts up. Like, baseball will be the first one back as far as team sports in this country for the top four or five sports leagues. And they're going to have the showcase. And I think the games are going to be interesting. And I think the moves that are going to be made are going to be interesting. And I think with the Cubs having a manager who's in there for the first time, that's going to be interesting. A guy like Joe Maddon, like Abdallah's joking about, using up his bullpen each and every day of the 60 games. I think that stuff's interesting.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be good because they'll be the only sport that's on right away until the NBA picks back up, until hockey picks back up. But ultimately, you know you're going to have – there's no excuse anymore. I guess there's always excuses. There's always excuses. But ultimately, like, if you're like, hey, I have to watch every single Cubs game because I'm a Cubs fan. I have to watch every single Reds game because I'm a Reds fan. I have to watch every single White Sox game because I'm a White Sox fan, because there's not 162 of them anymore. Before, you always had that mentality like, if I don't watch tonight, there's 161 of them more. There's 158 more games this year. There's 90 more games this year. Like, there's always, it's early, right? It's too late. Now, there's no early. It's been early. It's over. Now it's too late.
Well, so usually baseball is what? America's pastime, and it's the soundtrack to your summer, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a sound, and what, soundtrack.
And when someone says it's the soundtrack to your summer, why is it that? It's because it's on in the background.
All the time.
When something's on in the background, does it have your focus?
No.
No, it doesn't. So now you remove the on in the background to 60 games, and now you have to focus.
Yeah.
And you want to focus. And now, and listen, it by no means am I suggesting that this is going to replace the norm. Because eventually when we get to a vaccine and we get past the pandemic, sports and baseball will return to the 162, return to the normal flow. But for 60 games, having the focus locked in, like you said, that Cub fan knowing that they have to see each and every game, it removes baseball from being on in the background to now it is the focus to the attention of all sports fans. And that, I think, adds another element that makes this so much fun to kind of think about as we head towards it.
Yeah, because I've never been like a big, you know, coming in the next day arguing about balls and strikes and like, oh, this manager made this bad move and that kind of thing. Because it's like ultimately, yeah, all that stuff matters, but to argue about that stuff every single day, it becomes monotonous.
It
becomes,
game 82, it does not matter.
Exactly, right? But if you lose the season by, if you miss the playoffs by a game, you can point to every loss and be like, well, if they would have won that game, or if you wouldn't have made that move in that game. Now, you can do that for every single game. We can analyze every single Cubs and White Sox games the way we spend days analyzing a Bears game. Like, we spend, when the Bears are playing, we spend Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday analyzing the Bears game and then start previewing the next game on, like, Thursday, Friday, right?
Here's the difference, though. There will be the urgency to break down all of those moves in this season.
Yeah.
The difference is the lifespan of that argument.
Oh, for sure.
That
for
debate
sure.
will only last, if anything, 12 hours, because then you get another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to assess what you see in real time.
That's why, like Jeff Passan said, a 4-game losing streak is going to feel like a 14-game losing streak, because that's what it is. Essentially, that's what you're dealing with. If you lose 4 games in a row, you're losing a half a month, essentially, of a normal baseball season, and that's what you have to look at.
Chris Buck, Adam Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000. Coming up next, could Sam Darnold be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL? Yeah, someone said that. We'll hear it next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
I need you to help me out with something here, Abdallah. Last season, Sam Darnold, 19 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. He was sacked 33 times. Quarterback rating of 84.3. Completion percentage, 61.9. He threw for 3,000 yards for the Jets. Jets were not good last season. Sam Darnold was out of the lineup with some time because of he had mono, so he missed some games. It seemed like in his second year, towards the end of this season, he started to take some steps forward. I know Bill Barnwell wrote about Sam Darnold on ESPN.com this week. Whether or not, because if you look at the stats are not great. For his career, 36 touchdowns, 28 interceptions. He has been sacked 63 times in his career, his rookie year and his second year. Can Sam Darnold take it to the next step? I think it's an interesting conversation you and I can have. I think many football fans would have, is whether or not the Jets have their quarterback for the future. But I heard something yesterday. I wanted to get your opinion on this because I want to know, is this sarcasm? Is this take that you hear, is this a joke? That's what I want to ask you.
Okay.
Do you have you
I'll
heard
rate
this
the take.
Yet?
I'll okay. rate the take.
Because here's, here's a piece of audio that I heard. After I listened to it and I saw the facial expression of the person who said it, I can't tell whether or not he's kidding or if he's being absolutely serious that he thinks that Sam Darnold will be one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football
League.
Let me
rate this take.
Now let's lay this out there.
Okay.
Mike Greenberg from Get Up on ESPN Television is a Jets fan.
A little bias.
But Mike Greenberg is also a very smart person.
Yes.
So even though I know he has a bias towards the New York Jets, I don't believe on the surface he would just say this because of his bias. I'm wondering to you, is this a joke? Is he being sarcastic? Here's Greeny on SportsCenter yesterday talking about Sam Darnold.
Obviously, my opinion on this comes strictly from a professional perspective, and that is that Sam Darnold is about to become the best quarterback in the National Football League. I believe that last year he had almost no opportunity to demonstrate what he could do in year two because he got mono. He was sick for week one. He missed multiple games. Second half of the season, the Jets were 6-2. He actually played great. They've rebuilt the offensive line in front of him. He has a second year in the system, and he has a capable backup now in Joe Flacco. So I think it is clearly the case that Sam Darnold is ready to claim his rightful spot as one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the National Football League.
I can't figure it out. That's Mike Greenberg on SportsCenter. Now,
well,
he started
you heard
off
a slight giggle.
But he did start off by showing off a Joe Namath signed football. But then he then gives some, because listen, it's like acknowledgement to the bit. But then he goes into a full football take.
Obviously, my opinion on this comes strictly from a professional perspective.
Okay, yeah.
And that is that Sam Darnold is about to become the best quarterback in the National Football League. I believe that last year he had almost...
See, and then he dives into the take, right? He gives you material to back up where he's coming from with this. So is he being sarcastic? Is it a joke? Or does he really think that Sam Darnold could be one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League?
So I'm just... I think he thinks it. I think he wants it to be true, but I want a lot of things, and it's some things just aren't going to happen. You know, he said he had a good second half. You said he had a good second half as well. I'm looking at his completion percentages from November on, right?
Yeah.
69, 63, 63, 69, 58, 55, 56, 61.5, and 63.8. Some are okay. Some are not great. Look at his yards per attempt, right? I'll even look at air yards per attempt. Air yards per attempt in from November on, 6, 8, 11, 12, 5, 7, 6.5, 8, and then 4.8 to end
the season.
A lot
of dink and dunk there towards the end.
Exactly. So did he have a great second half? He had an okay second half. You know why he probably looked like he had a great second half? Because his first half was garbage and he didn't play most of it. If Bill Barnwell wrote a huge thing diving into everything about Sam Darnold, like you mentioned, when you I'll read this quote. When you take a look at the 26 quarterbacks who threw at least 400 passes, he ranked 21st or worse in QBR, passer rating, adjusted net yards per attempt, and off-target percentage. The guys below him were Baker Mayfield, Gardner Minshew, Daniel Jones, Andy Dalton, Trubisky, and Kyle Allen. So, I mean, does he have the potential? Sure, the potential might still be there, but to say that Sam Darnold came around in the second half, to say that he turned it around after missing a few games, I don't know if that's exactly accurate.
Well, you get to the end of the schedule, and I think where people assume he turned it around is because they went 6-2 in their last eight games.
Okay.
But you and I have talked about this before. Go through those eight games. It's not like they were really playing high caliber teams. Like you see, they beat Pittsburgh on December 22nd, 16-10. The one thing that just looking at a stat line does not tell you is that Pittsburgh was on a backup quarterback, right? So like that's something you have to remember when looking at these matchups. Beating Buffalo 13-6. Buffalo weren't they already a playoff team at that point?
I believe
in that contest.
Yeah.
So like that was like a wasted game for the Bills. I'm clicking on the box score right now. Yeah, like Matt Barkley threw 35 times for the Bills in that contest as the Bills scored 6 points against the Jets.
Yeah.
So those are two wins right there at the end of the season. They're not like, yeah, Buffalo is a playoff team, but you played their backup.
They Josh beat Allen Miami.
Josh Allen threw 5 times in that contest, and Barkley played the rest.
They beat Miami earlier in December, 22-21, but we all know Miami wasn't that great this year.
Yeah, I mean, Miami was scrappy. They're okay.
Okay, and then I would say his best win from those is probably, I mean, they beat Oakland 34-3. They beat Oakland pretty badly. He had a great game. You know, he had a 68.9 completion percentage, 127.8 quarterback rating.
Yeah, his two best games were clearly in November, the 17th at Washington The Jets win 34-17. He had four touchdown passes, one interception, quarterback rating of 121.3. The following week, the 24th of November, at home against the Raiders, they win 34-3, two touchdowns, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 127.8.
Look at his air yards per game, too, in those two games, 10.9 and 12.2. Let the dude air it out.
Yeah.
Let the dude take some shots. Let the dude air it out. And then you go back to this. Could you go from 12.2 air yards per game to 4.9 the next game? Like, I know they played they played the Bengals that game. They lost to the Bengals 22-6. That's crazy. Like, you can't. It feels like he doesn't have a lot of help there either. But ultimately, I don't know if this case for Sam Darnold to be the next great thing is accurate because, I mean, he's on the same. I'm not saying he's on the same trajectory as Trubisky, but if you look at the stats that I read from Bill Barnwell, they're comparable to Trubisky's stats.
Yeah, you know, a big difference, though, is what we've seen with Mitch to this point. Mitch has way more help when it comes to the other side of the ball.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
for
like
sure.
The Jets are not playing with one of the four or five best defenses in all of football. Mm-hmm. So then you can also point to Adam Gase. Is Adam Gase a high-level offensive mind in the league? We've seen him do it in some spots, but then we've also seen him really struggle. So is Adam Gase the right head coach for a guy, a young, impressionable quarterback like Sam Darnold? You know, I think that's where the Jets find themselves in a tricky spot.
Mm-hmm.
If Darnold takes off, if the offense gives you something, you know, last year, yards per play, the Jets were last, 32nd in the National Football League. So if they get anything, could that team be one of those surprise teams that goes like from the bottom back into the playoff race just by a few tweaks that they had in the offseason? And, you know, you mentioned Trubisky and we get into that whole conversation. Like, yeah, the stats look a lot alike on paper.
Mm-hmm.
The difference, though, is like Mitch right now is set up for more success than Darnold has.
Well, not right now, but.
Well, I mean, a quarterback competition, but like I was saying, the defense is much better.
Yeah.
You know, so like when you're playing those games where you know the defense is that good, I think that helps a young quarterback.
So what would you say is more likely? Which headline is more the trend that we're looking at Sam Darnold? The headline that Greeny said, which is Sam Darnold's going to be the best quarterback in the NFL, or is on track, could be the best quarterback in the NFL, or what Bill Barnwell wrote, is this Sam Darnold's last chance?
I would say if I had to place that Barnwell is closer to being correct than Greeny is.
I agree with
you. I mean, there is no way. I think, let's rule this out. Listen to the clip again.
Obviously, my opinion on this comes strictly from a professional perspective. And that is that Sam Darnold is about to become the best quarterback in the National Football League. I believe that last year he had almost no opportunity to demonstrate what he could do in year two because he got mono. He was sick for week one. He missed multiple games. Second half of the season, the Jets were 6-2. He actually played great. They've rebuilt the offensive line in front of him. He has a second year in the system, and he has a capable backup now in Joe Flacco. So I think it is clearly the case that Sam Darnold is ready to claim his rightful spot as one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Like, there's no way that he will be top two or three quarterbacks in the National Football League.
No.
Like, he'll be lucky if he gets into the top half, right? Like, if he gets above 20.
His ceiling is probably top 12, 13, 14, top 15.
Yeah, I would say 12-17 is like his ceiling. Right,
that's
right,
crazy.
In that area, right around the top half, to get into the top half. There's no way he will ever be a top 10 quarterback.
Well, Ben on Twitter saying Darnold will be a top 2-3 quarterback is crazy. Imagine thinking he'll be better than Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Rodgers, Watson,
no.
Brady, Matt
no.
Ryan, Drew Brees.
No.
Like,
no.
But the problem is, like you said, is he set up for success? Is he set up to fail? Because of Adam Gase, because he's on the Jets, because they don't have a defense or a decent defense like the Bears do, because he doesn't have a lot of weapons around him. Could he be better on a different team? And if this is his last chance, is another team going to take a shot at him and say, I can fix this guy because of what I've seen potential wise? But if we put a better defense behind him, if we put better weapons around him, he could be a top 10 quarterback. Like, if that was the case, if you plucked Sam Darnold out of the Jets and put him on a different team, could he be a better quarterback? Could he be a top 10 quarterback on a different team.
Would he be more successful if he was the quarterback of the Bills than Josh Allen is? Because the Bills have the defense. They have some weapons. Not great weapons, but they're a team that made the playoffs.
Well, put him on the Bears. Would he be more successful on the Bears? If he had Allen Robinson around next to him, if he had the Bears defense behind him, would he be more successful on the Bears?
Probably.
He's better than Trubisky.
Yeah, yeah. He plays the position. The problem obviously is like his turnovers, but mm-hmm. he knows how to play the position.
Mm-hmm.
So like in crunch time situations, high level thinking things through, trying to negotiate with what the defense is giving you.
Yeah.
That stuff Darnold can handle. It's he always thinks he can make the great throw, which we've seen with quarterbacks in the past, which then gets them in trouble. And then if he can limit that, he could be successful. I think it's a good question. I would go Darnold would be more successful with what the Bears are giving him.
I just think that he's going to, like, the problem we see with quarterbacks is guys like Darnold who, like, they're good, they're not great, but they're not given an opportunity. They're drafted very high. They're not given an opportunity to succeed because they go to a bad team that is just run poorly. Like Baker Mayfield, right? Like, they've tried to put a lot of stuff around Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield struggled last year. Barnrell's writing, is this Baker Mayfield's last chance? You know what I mean? So, like, you look at that, and it's like, if you put Baker Mayfield on the Bears, where he had a great defense, where he had, you know, a better, like, he's got great wide receivers, so he's got weapons around him. But if he had the backup of a good defense, how much better would these guys be, and would they last longer in the league?
So, like, I asked you to start this segment. Was Greeny being sarcastic? Was he just using his bias because he's a Jets fan? Or was he actually giving a serious take on SportsCenter that he thinks Darnold could be a top two or three quarterback in the NFL?
Yes to all of them.
But
you're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Tomorrow, 6 o'clock, 6 to 7, right here on ESPN 1000, the debut of The Baseball Show with Jonathan Hood, presented by Goose Island. Baseball is back tomorrow night, 6 p.m.
Yeah, see, they may be working out. They may be doing all that cool stuff, reporting, and, you know, they're practicing and doing little games and that kind of inter-squad stuff. But baseball's officially back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. With Jonathan Hood.
So a new show here at ESPN 1000, The Baseball Show. We bring in Jonathan Hood from ESPN 1000 and The Baseball Show to the conversation right now. You can follow him on Twitter at @TweetJHood. And Jonathan, as we take a look at these two teams, there was news on Thursday of Jose Quintana, the Chicago Cubs left-hander. He hurt his hand washing dishes. He was required surgery. He is expected to not throw again for 2 weeks. He could be out for probably the first month of this season. How badly does this hurt the Cubs' rotation so we head into this baseball season?
It definitely hurts the rotation, but also hurts the reputation that I look at with Quintana. You are actually washing dishes. No dishwasher, huh? Or no one washing dishes for you? I mean, what's with that? I mean, there's been a lot of bad excuses. Usually you don't get that in football or basketball or these other sports, but it is amazing that in baseball, these freak injuries, air quotes, these freak injuries happen. I was washing the dishes, and man, I messed up my hand. No, something else happened there. But, I mean, because it's a sprint, right, Chris? Because we're talking about 60 games, all hands on deck, as many people that are available as possible. You want to be able to have your best team out there. And of course, you know, when it comes to Quintana, he's a guy that can give you more than a little bit of than 500. He can be a real quality player for you as in the starting rotation. But Adam, the thing I'm looking at is that if Quintana's not there, that's a step backwards again for the Cubs. And when we take a look at the Cubs overall, we wonder what is the shelf life for Ross or for this Cubs team? Is the window still ajar for them to even win another championship anytime soon?
Well, you look at the two teams, Jonathan, the Cubs and the White Sox. You know, the Cubs, they lose Quintana like we just talked about. The Sox, they've got questions in their rotation as well as their bullpen. Which team do you think is better set up to make a playoff run? The White Sox division is easier than the Cubs, but the Cubs have the veteran presence. They've done this before. Which team do you think the 60-game stretch stacks up best for?
Well, you're leading the witness, sir, when you talk about the veteran team, right? Because it would be the Cubs. You know, again, the window is ajar until 2021 for this Cubs team to be able to make some noise. I think that if you're a White Sox fan, yeah, you like to be able to see a team, this team be able to flourish with their young players. But I just think that you were talking about Rizzo, we're talking about Bryant, Schwarber. You take a look at that pitching staff. That team should be able to compete. But the thing that we all have talked about over the last couple of years is the underachievement of the Cubs, how they have not been able to play up to their standard. And that should be a team that should be always in the mix in the playoffs. So I would lean toward the Cubs, because if I said White Sox, and if the Sox get off to a poor start, then it's like, oh, well, you know, this team is not what they're supposed to be. This team should be able to be better because of their young players mixed with their veterans. But I'm not starting the clock on the White Sox in 2020. I think that we're going to see some shades of good play. But 2021 and moving forward, that should be the time that we really evaluate the White Sox.
Jonathan Hood from ESPN 1000. The baseball show debuts tomorrow at 6 p.m. right here on ESPN 1000. You can catch that show every weekday, Monday through Friday, right here on ESPN 1000. Jonathan, when you look at the Cubs, if they do get off to that slow start, do you think they could start trading away some of the pieces on this team who may need contracts in the future? Could you see some of these pieces being sold before the deadline?
See, the question about that, Chris, at least the answer for that is, what does Theo want to do? Everything is contingent on what Theo wants, because he does not have a new contract. He's tethered to 2021, and it's crazy to me that someone as good as Theo Epstein did not get a contract extension as soon as the World Series is won, like 5 or 6 more years. He's up in 2021. I don't know if he's going to get an extension in the near future. So whatever happens with this team, it makes me wonder, does Theo look at this team, and if it underachieves, and says, you know what, we can go and do this for one more run, so we're going to add payroll. And if ownership and the Ricketts say, well, we can't add payroll, then I think that the best course of action is to be able to start pairing off some of these players and decide how you're going to be able to address the future. And here's why. I can't come up with 5 or 6 guys in the minor league system for the Cubs that can be able to be put in place right now and to be able to really help this Cubs team for the future. They are bereft of quality in the minor league system. And so at some point, how are you able to replenish the minor league system? You got to do that by making trades. And so if Ricketts continues to talk about, well, we don't have any money and how we don't have a stack of cash in the corner, as he said a few weeks ago, all right, cool. Then you're going to have to be able to pare back payroll. That means that you will not be a winner for the next couple of years or so. You're not going to even come close to the World Series. So I think anything that the Cubs do is predicated on, one, will they spend more money for the future? And two, if you don't, it's okay to be able to make trades to try to get younger. That's a major issue with this Cubs team.
Yeah, and I think that that's the biggest divide, Jonathan. It's like, yeah, Theo can want a lot of things, and he can say, hey, look, you should extend, you know, you should sign Chris Bryant to an extension. You should extend Javi Baez. But if Ricketts comes in and says, no, hey, we need another pitcher now. We need to sign a pitcher. We need to trade for a pitcher. If Ricketts says, no, I'm not spending the money, what is Theo supposed to do? How is he supposed to work the so-called Theo magic if he's being hamstrung by his owner? It's going to be an interesting season. It's going to be an interesting offseason. I want to ask you about the White Sox, and specifically Michael Kopech. As a Sox fan, what do you expect to see out of him this season?
Well, it's a great unknown, because we saw glimpses of how he could really be special, that fastball. And again, we only saw just like a little bit of glimpse of what he could be. I'm hoping that we can be able to see a guy that can be able to step into this position with this White Sox team and really do some and provide a little magic. Because, but here's the thing, Adam, he's so young. It's really, again, the great unknown about what he can do. I just remember what we saw from him. It was like, okay, this guy could eventually be an ace for the future. But the funny thing about all of this, right, with the season, and it's 60 games, and it's not going to be with full stands, and there might be some coaches here or there that's missing. It's just very unusual. Like, these type of topics would be great if we were talking about this in April when the season started, like when it's supposed to start, and be able to go through the 162 and be able to have ebb and flows. I've been reading so many different, like, you know, almanacs and different websites about what we could see. But the thing is that with all these players, because it's 60 games plus, if you get to the playoffs, a lot of this is unknown. I would say that I'm hoping that Kopech pitches well, because it's really not about today. It's about the future. But it's just so strange, guys, with these 60 games. You just don't know what you're going to get with a lot of these players and how they'll be able to adjust during this COVID-19.
Jonathan Hood from ESPN 1000, the baseball show here on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000 debuts tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Ah, Newcastle tied it.
You like that?
I'm sorry.
We just cashed the over, by the way. The over is cash. Now we're looking at that Newcastle money line coming
the
in.
Over! Jonathan, each weekday at 6 o'clock, you will be talking baseball. What should we expect besides great sports talk and your opinions on the show? What should we expect from the baseball show?
What you can expect is a lot of different topics and for the Cubs and Sox fan. You know, one of the things that we hear from these flagship stations is that a lot of it is just a bunch of fluff a lot of times, because the Sox and the Cubs want to be able to have a cheery outlook. Their pre- and post-game shows are always happy. But what we have to do is provide a spot for the fan, for the Cubs and Sox fan to be able to call in before or after games. And that's why we're on at 6 o'clock. I think that we're going to be a very unique show as a non-flagship show, saying, hey, we're the voice of the fan, and we want you to be able to have your voice heard on the show. So it's one thing for me to sit there and take phone calls, but it's important for the Sox and Cubs fan to be able to talk about their team honestly, where there's no restrictions, there's no, you know, program director or no general manager that says, I don't like the content. You know, we mastered this, as you well know, Chris and Adam, with Bulls Buzz. You know, it became a very popular show, and the reason why is because we were not, even though we were the flagship of the Bulls fan need to be able to have a real voice in there to have their voice heard. And so the same thing with the Cubs and Sox fan. Don't worry about whether or not you should say something or not, because on this show you can say whatever you want about the Cubs and Sox and everything else, Major League Baseball. So I think that makes it very unique, just really interactive with the fan, not only on Twitter but also on the phone lines as well. So I think that makes us completely different than most shows talking baseball.
Will you have a few minutes to crack open some of those old baseball cards? One of my favorite segments is, who's this guy?
Well, I'm not working with Carmen, so I don't think we'll be able to get that.
What's he hitting?
What's he hitting? Look at that afro on that guy. Hey, look at this guy. Hey, I mean, look at the back of the card. It's unbelievable. No, if I was working with Carm, then maybe we would be able to look back of the baseball card. But no, there will be no baseball card bag.
That's great.
The show.
No, that's good. More time for phone calls. More time for the people.
Should I warn our producers, Tyler, Sean, and Eric, that if things go south for the Southsiders, they may have to set up a studio recording for you after a show can scream into a microphone about how angry you are about the Chicago White Sox, because that's something that Abdallah and I had to do in the past, back in the day. The show would end on ESPN 1000, and you would march down to the, I think it was Studio C, and you would just scream your lungs out over a blown White Sox save.
Tell Adam I need an extra hour.
We're staying local!
Well, you know, after a while, you get to get tired of the Twins kicking the White Sox ass. So sometimes you just get tired when you've lost 16 out of 17 games to the Twins. You just feel like, you know what? Someone needs to say something here. And so and I remember doing a lot of that. And there was one of these shows where I got really dizzy. And I was just like, you know
sit
what?
Down.
I'm not going to go to the hospital for the White Sox. So that's when I decided to kind of dial it back a little bit, because there was a time where it was like, man, screaming about the White Sox. I was thinking, either I could be able to talk about this intelligently without screaming or spend time at Northwestern. So I decided to dial it back a little bit.
We still have calls. We're staying local. Tell Adam.
The baseball show tomorrow night debuts at 6 o'clock. Jonathan Hood will be with you each and every weeknight. Gang, you set for baseball to be played this summer, 6 to 7, the baseball show right here on ESPN 1000. Congratulations on the show, Jonathan, and thank you for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, and thanks to Goose Island for being part of the baseball show. It's going to be a lot of fun every night at 6 o'clock talking Cubs and White Sox. So we're going to be the home of that non-flagship show talking about the Cubs and Sox. And the over has kicked in. Newcastle.
There it is.
I 70, love it.
73rd minute.
Soccer clap.
Well, there's no fans in the stands, so.
No, they're well, what's that buzz that I keep hearing then?
Well, that's sure that the piped in.
It's one guy
audio.
Going into a microphone just going,
yeah. Yeah, the whole time. Yeah. I like that there's an alternate, by the way. There's an alternate broadcast if you want to hear it with just the ball kicking with like no fans. I don't want that. I want that sound. I love it.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, West Ham.
That's Jonathan Hood. I'm Chris Bleck with Adam Abdallah. You know, the best part about the show, as Jonathan said there, you don't want team executives giving orders.
Keep the suits out.
To the broadcast.
Keep the suits out.
To then limit the conversation from the fans about the teams.
No suits.
You know, though, the one pet peeve I've talked about on the air before, the pet peeve I have, you go to Cubs.com, WhiteSox.com the day after a loss.
No content.
There's very little content. But when you get a walk-off slam from Javi Baez, you get more videos and more content than you could ever dream of.
Every angle I can watch that home run if I want to.
A real fan of a team wants to consume the product each and every day, win or loss.
Mm-hmm.
Provide it. Don't limit. Provide it. So tomorrow, the baseball show right here on ESPN 1000 at 6.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Download today's podcast on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you find your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn. Search Bleck and Abdallah on the ESPN Chicago app. I'm Chris Bleck with Adam Abdallah. Thank you to Tyler Aki for producing today's show. Fred and Xander coming up next from 10 to noon right here on ESPN 1000. Remember, tomorrow, the baseball show with Jonathan Hood debuts at 6 p.m., it'll be on each and every night throughout the summer during the week, Monday through Friday. You will get your baseball fix right here on ESPN 1000. Did you hear what Lincoln Riley, head coach at Oklahoma, said the other day, Adam? Here's Lincoln Riley. Oklahoma, by the way, when you look ahead at this season, Oklahoma for S&P Plus is projected to be the eighth best team in college football. Now, you kind of have to look at it and then suggest that in the Big 12, they'll probably be the best team in the Big 12. Therefore, they won't finish eighth because some of the SEC teams will knock each other out. You'll have some Big 10 teams because there's two Big 10 teams ahead of Oklahoma right now. And I think there's three, actually. Penn State, Ohio State, two. I was right. LSU, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama all ahead of Oklahoma. Those four teams will not all be ahead of Oklahoma by the time we get to the end of the season.
Chris, it's like Jurassic Park. Life finds a way.
Yeah,
like
Oklahoma will be there.
Life finds a way.
The Big 12
for Oklahoma to be there. So, and life finds a way for those SEC teams to beat up on each other.
So the question is this: when will there be? Right, like will it be this fall as we see spiking COVID-19 numbers around the South and into the West? Is that going to take place? Will college football take place in the South this fall? Here's Lincoln Riley on the possibilities of college football being played next spring.
It'd probably be a conference season, postseason only. But, you know, we've seen often teams go in and play well into January in the college football playoff and then start spring practice at some point in February and nobody says a word about it. So I do believe you got to adjust your schedule in the season. You'd have to adjust your schedule to give players plenty of time off to get their bodies back, all of that during summer, maybe even to have a little bit later start date the next fall. But I think the people who say it's not doable or, in my opinion, just don't want to think about it. And I just think it would be wrong of us to take any potential option off the table right now. And I think it would be very difficult to say that the spring's not a potential option. I, for one, believe it's very doable.
So that's Lincoln Riley the other day. It's very doable that college football could be played in the spring. I'd be okay with that. Listen, it's all in the context of COVID-19. Everything's going to be different. So if college football has to be played in the spring, it would stink that we don't have college football coming up in the next 2 months. But then we would eventually get it, and that would be okay.
Yeah, the only season that might not really be affected by this is baseball, like long term, right? Like baseball is going to have their regular season, their 60-game season. They're going to play their playoffs, and then their offseason will start as normal. As long as everything, you know, progresses and we have a vaccine and we're out of this, you know, that whole cloud, whatever, right? And then you get to them starting their regular season. Like the NBA, they're going to try to finish their season, and then they may not be able to start their next season until December. And then you have to adjust that. The NFL says they're going to start on time, but who knows? They may have to delay a few things, and you could have, you know, the more they push back, the more they push back the Super Bowl, the more they push back everything else. The same with college football. If you have to play in the spring, then you just play in the spring. You move the draft and you figure it out. Listen, the schools aren't turning down money. So if you tell them that if you're going to have, you know, games in the spring, they'll take it. Because what are they going to do? Say, no, we don't want the money?
Could you imagine March Madness and college football going on at the same time? Because college football coaches are the ones that are going to be against this. Because all the eyeballs will be on the football programs. And the Sooners also landed yesterday a 5-star quarterback for the class of 2021, Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. So the Sooners getting it done. Black and Abdallah, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.